Hello, good morning, and welcome. It's Tuesday, the 13th of April, 2020, and we're back with episode 190. Before getting started, just a friendly reminder, if you're a fan of this podcast, please don't forget to drop me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. So I am back, more or less anyway, and I realized that last week's conspicuous absence after my little April Fool's joke that I was pulling the plug on the podcast was a bit poorly timed, but I am back for today, but really for today only, because my wife and I are making a big move. I'll be announcing that later. So I'm going to be kind of on a bit of a break until, let's call it, early to mid-May. So roughly about a month. I will, in fact, be offline. But that doesn't mean we don't have some fantastic stuff to discuss today, because what have we got? Cruise is launching its robo-taxi service in Dubai. Tesla abandons radar to go vision only. And Mercedes launches its electric S-Class, the EQS, without much mention of any self-driving trickery. All this right now. So this is a pretty big deal. Cruise has just become the exclusive provider of self-driving robo-taxis in Dubai until 2029. This is huge. So I know I've talked quite a bit about Cruise in the past, and I have often suggested, especially ever since the Cruise Origin launch event that I attended a while back, that this would be a fantastic thing to start testing in deployment on limited streets and roads, maybe bus lanes, certainly within Cruise's hometown of San Francisco, never mind other cities elsewhere besides. But that's I didn't really connect the dots all the way to Dubai, although now that we're hearing this news, that actually makes a lot of sense. Dubai, of course, has always been extremely proactive with respect to kind of at least experimenting with, if not, you know, effectively, practically pushing forward with bleeding edge public mobility modes of transit. So, for example, Dubai already has a proper transit system. They've been experimenting with various modes of alternative transportation, such as certainly electric vehicles and even vertical takeoff and landing vehicles. And this, I think, is kind of the perfect step, the obvious step, at least, in the right direction. I just didn't see it happening with Cruise, but this is really great stuff. So under the terms of this particular agreement, the idea is that there will be a limited number of Cruise vehicles. And again, specifically, we're talking about the Cruise Origin. This is, of course, the kind of boxy, true level 5 vehicle that Cruise launched a few years ago. The idea is to eventually scale this up to 4,000 different vehicles by 2030. So according to the Crown Prince of Dubai, Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed, this is a quote-unquote major step towards realizing Dubai's self-driving transport strategy aimed at converting 25% of total trips in Dubai into self-driving transport trips across different modes of transport by 2030, end quote. So I think this is really great. One of the neat things, you know, having been to Dubai, one of the great things about it is it's a really new city. I mean, if you want any evidence of this, just go look at historical Google Earth satellite imagery or anywhere else besides, really. And you can see that up until about as recently as just 20 years ago, there wasn't much there. So a lot of the infrastructure is at the oldest, just 20 years old, and frankly, a lot of it is much, much newer. And so this then leads to, frankly, phenomenal roads for the most part, both in terms of the physical construction, but also indeed the various line markings and signage. And so it's a very, very modern, very, shall we say, less challenging, I suppose, sort of a city than, say, frankly, San Francisco itself. That said, the traffic in Dubai is pretty horrendous. So actually, this then would be a really fantastic thing to have. Also, in Dubai, very, very strict regulation with respect to, say, alcohol, especially with driving, of course, for which I believe there's zero tolerance whatsoever, of course. So something which enables, or at least further facilitates, ride-sharing and indeed, in this case, driverless taxi rides is really a great step in the right direction. I should say, too, the timing makes a lot of sense given the ongoing pandemic, because Dubai has been extremely proactive with its safety measures. The flagship airline, Emirates, of course, has been very, very proactive with respect to the various safety protocols and indeed playing their own role to help deliver COVID tests and, of course, the vaccines themselves. They just launched, or they're about to launch, a promotional flight, I believe, the first of its kind, with all passengers fully vaccinated. So I think this kind of plays neatly into the overarching strategy of really demonstrating Dubai as being both supremely forward-thinking with respect to public transit generally, but also indeed with respect to the safety elements needed in today's and tomorrow's post-pandemic world. So this, I think, is very, very cool stuff. And frankly, I wish it was, you know, I wish these were going to be on the road sooner. Unfortunately, it's not actually going to launch until 2023. So we've got about another 2 years to go, but I will circle back with more information as it comes my way. All right. So as I often joke, you know, I always hesitate to discuss too much about Tesla without being sort of tossed aside as some sort of Tesla fanboyism. Here, I'm just stating some facts that apparently Elon has announced that the upcoming version 9.0 of full self-driving beta is going to completely free itself from anything other than just pure camera vision. So, as a friendly reminder, Tesla have never used, well, that's not entirely true, they've effectively never used, and certainly currently don't, and never intend to use LiDAR like every other automaker on the planet. They have, however, made use of radar and sonar. Well, this is all going away, because henceforth, apparently, the version 9.0 of FSD beta will be computer vision only. That's it. The idea is that it's just so good now. They've got this new sort of version of their neural net called Deep Rain, and apparently it's just so good, and the data fidelity is so high that it basically renders totally obsolete whatever you might be able to get from radar and indeed even from LiDAR. So this, I mean, on the one hand, it's not super surprising. We've known forever that Elon, well, we certainly knew he was never going to ever consider LiDAR. This has been a foregone conclusion for a while. That said, Teslas have made use of radar, and apparently that too now is going away. So that's a bit of a surprise, really, but I guess it kind of just fits in with everything he's got planned, because again, the logic is that once you've got computer vision, which is good enough, then by definition, since we humans drive with our eyes, we only use vision, then it must be the case that a properly fleshed out neural net powered computer vision system should also be, you know, ipso facto, should be equally good to human vision capabilities. I mean, look, it should be noted that the biggest argument against this approach hasn't necessarily been that he's just, you know, wrong on his face forever, but rather that given the present state of technology, he's definitely wrong for today and indeed even for tomorrow and likely for the next 10 or 15 years, give or take. That said, I believe it was Chris Urmson who had said not long ago that, look, LiDAR may indeed be a bit of a crutch, but so what? We need that crutch for the next 10 or 15 years. Let's take advantage of it while we've got it, because it's good. It works perfectly fine. The costs are dropping. And even from an aesthetic point of view, it's just not as ugly and cumbersome as it used to be. So that's kind of a moot point also. So why not take advantage of it? But here we've got Elon continuing to press forward with his claims that, you know, sufficiently good vision-based neural net-powered self-driving capabilities are not, in fact, 10 or 15 years away. They're practically here now. And it's interesting, right? Because I'm sure that many of you have by now pulled up on YouTube the various examples of FSD beta being tested in the wild. If you haven't, actually go and do it. I think it'll blow your mind. I think they work astonishingly well from what little I've seen. And if version 9 is anything, you know, truly, well, Elon describes it as being really a step change improvement, right? And if indeed that's true, that's pretty exciting stuff. I should mention, I did email Tesla to see whether we could get it installed on our Tesla Model Y. Haven't heard back anything definitive yet. Certainly keeping fingers crossed. Certainly hope it happens. If only so I can actually test it and give you some sort of objective review on it. But really, I'm just giddy excited to try it because, of course. So my biggest concern from what I've seen just watching the various videos on YouTube, so the good news is it does seem remarkably, astonishingly, I might even say capable. It seems pretty damn good, honestly. My biggest concern really just comes down to smoothness. you know, with respect to passenger comfort. It's one thing, as we've learned and discussed quite a bit in the past, it's one thing to be an active, shall we say, driver not driving, to use an aviation terminology of, you know, pilot not flying. So it's one thing to be a driver not driving, where you're sitting in the driver's seat and you're actively paying attention, very kind of hands-on, as it were, without being truly hands-on, I guess. But you're very, very attentive, right? And so that's, that goes a long way towards effectively mitigating any sort of motion sickness that might occur from the way the car drives. But it's a very different thing entirely to being a truly passive passenger, whether in the front seat or certainly indeed in the back, where you're not paying attention. And so any sort of not perfectly smooth driving maneuvers are probably going to make you pretty car sick pretty quickly. That, I think, is a pretty big concern, because even just watching the various videos, that to me is a bit of a problem. There's far too much hesitation still, at least it appears to be from what I've seen. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to be there's still far too much hesitation, far too much kind of dawdling, sort of indecisiveness, and a lot of kind of stop and go. And indeed, a bit much of kind of left-right adjustment, especially turning onto various roads and getting kind of properly centered in the lane, especially, of course, where there aren't any lane markings. Never mind the fact that being able to do that at all without any lane markings is an incredibly impressive feat on its own. I am concerned, honestly, with how it's going to play out for those, as I say, not actively paying attention. I think that motion sickness could very, very quickly become a very bad thing. You know, speaking of which, I actually know people who claim to get motion sick just from the concept of regen braking. I suspect, and I've told them that it's probably because of the way they drive, that they tend to drive in a very kind of binary sort of way, where they're either accelerating or they're not, meaning their foot's totally off the accelerator. But of course, in a regular car, if you did that, you just go from kind of, some acceleration to a very gradual deceleration, right? But of course, if you did that with a Tesla or any vehicle with, you know, proper regenerative braking, well, if you drove in that sort of binary kind of on-off fashion, you're constantly going to be going from accelerating, decelerating. And of course, that's going to make you, and indeed even your passenger, motion sick. So my point is simply that motion sickness in a car is a very nuanced thing, and it's not some sort of it's not like some gimmick. I mean, it's a very real problem for many people. I mean, I've known people move to tears, never mind nausea and indeed even vomiting eventually, from the savage degree of motion sickness they can get in cars. So this, I'm very curious to see how this will turn out. Obviously, as soon as I can get FSD beta up and running in our car, you can be sure I will absolutely be I was going to say talking about it, certainly, yes, but I will absolutely be making multiple videos, you can be sure. All right, so for this last bit, just a few comments worth mentioning. Mercedes did just announce, and officially, I think they've just lifted this huge press embargo because literally everybody in the automotive world is talking and writing about it, and indeed even reviewing press vehicles. The new electric S-Class called the EQS. If that sounds at all familiar, by the way, that's because you'll remember there was, about a year ago, a pretty big amount of fanfare for Mercedes EQC. This, of course, was the electrified version of the fantastic GLC sort of midsize SUV thing. And if you're kind of wondering whatever happened to that, well, that's part of the problem, and indeed, I guess, a bit of the concern, because nothing happened. It was effectively, delayed in Europe, where it was selling basically nothing, and therefore the plug was effectively pulled on its release here in the US indefinitely. I don't think we're ever actually going to get it here, which is a shame because, well, let me actually pause for a moment. I was going to give a rather scripted response saying it's a shame because it was a, you know, wonderful car, but the truth is it isn't really a wonderful car. There were issues with like range, and never mind the lack of an adequate charging network. So I don't know how that would have actually been. However, the first reports of the new S-Class, or I should say the EQS, are frankly nothing short of staggering. So everything from the astonishing interior, which, I mean, Mercedes have done it again. It literally blows away everything in the automotive world. It is spectacularly plush and luxurious and looks just gorgeous, including this, what is it? I think a 57-inch screen, which sweeps from the left to the right side of the front of the cockpit. It's actually three separate screens kind of put together. It looks just spectacular. The seating is, as Marquise Brownlee said from his YouTube channel, it's like something out of a really fine airplane seat, like in a first-class cabin, say. Anyway, I could go on and on about that, but obviously what we care about here is the performance, specifically with respect to its autonomous driving capabilities, of which there isn't much to say. There is quite a bit to say about the electrification of the vehicle. So, for instance, it's got a whopping 107.8. That's quite precise. That's called 108 kilowatt-hour battery pack at its highest trim level. I believe the lowest version is something like 93-ish, I think, kilowatt hours. Which, yeah, if you're keeping track, that is a little bit bigger than Tesla's largest battery pack. And they are claiming something around 470, 480 miles of range on the European driving cycle, though, as you may or may not know, that, however, tends to be just tremendously optimistic. And it's always the case that the American EPA testing cycle is quite a bit lower. So if I were to guess, I would, my guess is that here on American roads with the EPA testing cycle, we're going to see something on the order of between 350 to 400 miles of real world driving in the best case scenario. So you're probably already trying to do some math in your head and you're realizing, well, that means it's not a particularly efficient car. Look, I don't think that any automaker is going to be able to produce an electric drivetrain anywhere near as efficient as Tesla have done so far, at least not anytime soon. Furthermore, let's not forget, the S-Class is a really large, really heavy car. So I don't know the actual weight yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if it weighs, frankly, a bit more even than a Tesla. Model S, certainly, and okay, maybe not necessarily more than a Model X, but we shall see. That said, it is officially recognized now as the most slippery car aerodynamically ever produced in the world. It's got a drag coefficient of just 0.2, which means not just extremely slippery through the air to further help increase efficiency, but also, frankly, to help reduce interior noise. But anyway, this is sort of beyond the scope. Again, the focus, what we care about most, obviously, on this podcast is what are they doing with their semi-autonomous driving capabilities? What have they announced? And that's what's, I was going to say surprising, except that it isn't. It is, however, disappointing that indeed they aren't saying much about it. Remember, we've said in the past, we've talked about this quite a bit, how Mercedes have basically said that they're kind of effectively giving up on self-driving vehicles, at least for consumers. They're going to focus on this for the Daimler commercial truck division. But that the consumer vehicles are, you know, passenger cars are just going to kind of make do with effectively whatever Mercedes have been doing with ADAS. So I thought this was a bit weird. I've talked about this before. I said, look, what does this even mean? I mean, every year their various ADAS capabilities do indeed get better and better, whether it's lane keep assist, active cruise control, emergency braking, and so on, right? I mean, at some point these get so good that they start to spill over into certainly level 3 driving capabilities, if not level 4 eventually. But Mercedes are saying, no, that's not what they're doing. So I guess it's safe to say the EQS will probably not, in fact, rival anything Tesla has. Although they do have lane change capabilities. So that is getting quite close to Tesla's autopilot, or I should say navigate on autopilot. Nevertheless, I think it's safe to say it will not be as competent as what Tesla are doing. And certainly to the point of the prior segment, certainly nothing in the pipeline on the horizon for anything even close to full self-driving beta. But again, we've known this for a while. I find it a bit, nevertheless, quite disappointing, really, that Mercedes are not, in fact, doing this. I still maintain they're going to eventually, indisputably, they're going to partner up with somebody to suddenly bring about Tesla rivaling semi-autonomous technology, I would say within the next 2 or 3 years, guaranteed. Like, I would be mind-blown shocked if that weren't the case. So, but look, unless and until that actually happens, for the time being, what have we got? I think it's safe to say that we finally do have a proper Tesla Model S rival. And actually, I'm going to go one step further than that. We don't just have a Tesla Model S rival. We have a Mercedes. We have the Mercedes of electric cars, which is a really big deal, right? So, You know, what's missing? Well, besides the fact the price point should be something quite a bit higher still than even the most expensive Tesla Model S or Model X. I mean, I would be shocked if this thing starts at anything under $120,000. To be honest, I think the only really big thing, and I say the only as if it's not a big deal, it's a huge deal, is the issue once again of charging infrastructure. It is the case that there is now a new, compatibility type of thing called plug and charge. So it turns out that it's sort of the Teslafication of third-party chargers. So it used to be the case that if you had an electric car, which not used to be, it's still the case that if you have an electric car and you go to any one of the various third-party type of charge points here and there, you have to set up an account. And if you don't have an account, then you have to literally pick up the phone and call a number and wait to get a hold of a person, put in your credit card number, and it's just a mess. I actually know this because I've tried it once. I once tried this with an Audi e-tron, an A3 e-tron, which, by the way, brilliant car, but for that horrific experience with third-party charging. Well, plug and charge effectively, as I say, it sort of Teslafies the charging experience so that you effectively have one account set up. I believe it's set up through the automaker itself, so that henceforth, whenever you go to any charge point, any third-party charge point, right, you just kind of plug in the charger, car starts charging, but it will have communicated with the charging infrastructure itself. It knows what the car is, it knows what to bill and how much, and it just does it all transparently. So you never have to worry about it anymore. So the point is, if this actually works as advertised, then we can say that non-Tesla automakers will finally have a Tesla sort of experience henceforth for charging. And that, to me, is a really big deal, effectively removing the quite literal, I would say, roadblock to even considering any other electric car, not a Tesla. So yeah, that's a tremendously huge deal. I mean, that said, as much as I'm excited for the EQS, I can't wait for this to trickle down to, you know, obviously a smaller, more affordable car in the near term, hopefully. Although, of course, by that point in time, Tesla will have rolled out the Model 2, presumably, which is their sub $25,000 kind of hatchbacky type car. But, you know, it's probably, 3 to 5 years out, I suppose. Anyway, obviously, lots of great things going on. So I guess that is a wrap for today. And indeed, the next month or so, as I say, I will be back probably sometime early to mid-May. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.